Those of you who have been with us for the past few weeks know that we are coming to the culmination of the story of Ruth. And for those of you who may not have been here, I'm going to do a brief recap as we lead up to the story today. Naomi and her husband and two sons lived in Bethlehem until there was a famine there. So they left Bethlehem and moved to Moab, where there was plenty. There was hope for them. And in that land of hope, both sons found Moabite wives. Now, if they had gone back to Israel, that might have been a problem, because you see, according to the Torah, no Moabite can become a member of the community of faith for 10 generations. But they were in Moab, so it wasn't an issue, until the husband and both of the sons die, and Naomi is left with two Moabite daughters-in-law, and no visible means of support. She has to return home. Well, after talking to her daughters-in-law, one sees the wisdom of staying behind in her homeland, but Ruth refuses. And when Naomi returns to Bethlehem, Ruth returns with her. We have two widows, neither of whom have a way to support themselves. Ruth goes out into the fields and gleans, which is essentially the Israelite welfare system of the time, so they'll at least have enough to eat. She happens to be gleaning in the fields of a man named Boaz, who is a relative of Naomi's late husband. He notices her. First of all, he notices her because she's a Moabite, and Moabites stand out like a sore thumb, you know. But he's already heard stories about her kindness. The word here is chesed. It is the long-suffering, everlasting love of God that she reflects toward Naomi. And he's impressed by that. When Ruth gets home, Naomi sets a plan in motion. Ruth is to go to the threshing floor when all the barley is there, and when Boaz will be sleeping there to protect the barley. She is to dress in a beautiful dress, put on perfume, and when she gets there, while he's sleeping, she is to uncover his feet. Now, feet in Hebrew has a different meaning than it does for us. So we're not sure exactly how much of him she did uncover. But she uncovered enough that he got cold and woke up. And when he didn't take advantage of the situation. Instead, he set a plan in motion. He gave Ruth enough barley for Naomi and for her to live on, and he decided he was going to see if he couldn't take Naomi and Ruth into his household. There was just one problem, and this is where we ended last week. You see, there was a closer relative of Naomi's late husband. This sounds like describing a southern family, doesn't it? A little bit. But there was a closer relative who had the right to redeem the land, to claim the land. And so Boaz's plan is to talk the other relative into giving up that right, giving it up to him, so that he can marry Ruth and take Naomi into his household. So he goes to the city gate. This is where big decisions are made. He talks to the closer relative, invites him over to sit down, and then he gathers 10 other men. Now, to this day, in an Orthodox Jewish setting, you have to have 10 males to have prayer. It's called a minyan. But in this case, they're not here to pray. They're here as a kind of jury, or perhaps as a set of witnesses. Boaz has a suspicion that this closer relative has already been planting barley in the fields that belong to Elimelech, Naomi's late husband. But to continue to do so, he's going to have to make a change. So Boaz says, you're the closer relative. Are you going to redeem the land? Are you going to claim it? Seems like maybe you already have. The fellow didn't want to give up all of that barley. He said, well, I suppose I will. And then Boaz played his trump card. He said, well, you know, if you do, you not only have to take Naomi into your household, you have to take Ruth in as well. And immediately the man says, I couldn't do that. To have a Moabite in my family line would ruin the line for 10 generations. I just cannot do that, no matter how much land is involved. And Boaz said, good. So Boaz redeems the land. invites Naomi into his household, and a wedding is set for Boaz and Ruth. They're married, and as time progresses, it comes to be known that she's going to have a child. When the child is born, he's male. And all the women come around Naomi. You see, in this story, he's really described as Naomi's child, even though Ruth gave birth to him. They gather around and they say, "Oh, what a wonderful gift you've been given. He will be a nourisher of your old age, a giver of new life, because you see, you have a daughter-in-law who is better for you than seven sons." Folks, that's better than just about anything you can imagine in that day and time. And so they name the child Obed, who becomes the father of Jesse, who becomes the father of David, the most prominent king in the entire line of the monarchy in Israel. And that's where our story ends. But that storyteller, I am convinced, ends it that way because she wants us to know, and I do still believe this is a woman telling the story. I don't think a male during that era could have created these female characters as effectively. I think she ends it not to discredit David at all, but to call to account those people, Ezra and Nehemiah and their followers, who, when the people came back from Babylon, said, "Send those foreign wives away. Send those foreign children back. We want to be a pure tribe." What she reminds them of is that they were not already a pure tribe. That if they followed the law, David, three generations from a Moabite woman, would not be considered an Israelite, if you were literalists about the law. What she presents is the idea that maybe, just maybe, God could work through those people we reject, those people we push aside, those people we want to send back wherever we want to send them back to. Because you see, the person whose steadfast faith carries this story is a Moabite woman named Ruth, the great-grandmother of David. Now, what does this have to do with Lent? I've heard that question a few times during these past weeks, as you might imagine. Well, this literally leads us up to the story we're going to be hearing next week and the following week. Because you see, Ruth is one of those handful of women included in the genealogy of Jesus. She's there for a reason. She's not just holding a place. Her story, I believe, leads us into an understanding of the story of Jesus. First of all, they're both outsiders. Ruth is a Moabite, of course, a foreigner. Jesus, though Israelite, though Jewish, is from Galilee. To the Judeans that he'll be meeting in this next couple of weeks, he is still a foreigner. He's a Galilean, and you know what those Galileans are like. A bunch of hotheads. You can't trust them. Ruth has complete faith in the God of Israel. So much so that she's willing to put everything on the line. When she goes to the threshing floor, she is laying down her reputation. She may even be ready to lay down her life. She doesn't know when she walks out there. Because of her trust in a God she has chosen to follow. She doesn't just do it for herself. She does it for Naomi as well. Jesus trusts the God of Israel to such an extent that he literally lays everything on the line, including his life, not just for those who followed him, but for those who rejected him, even for those who hated him. You see the parallels here? The story, which is really the story of Naomi, even though it's named for Ruth, is a story of a woman who is full. A husband, two sons, two daughters-in-law, plenty to eat, who then is emptied, losing everything she treasures, barely being able to subsist on the food that Ruth can gather. A woman who is bitter with God. She changes her name to bitter because she feels that God has wronged her because of her life circumstances. But by the end of the story, things have come around. Because you see, this grandson, who is actually blood kin to a Moabite and no blood kin to Naomi, will be the restorer of her life, the nourisher of her old age, the one who fills her emptiness. When we use that word redeem, it has a lot of different meanings. It means to take possession of land, to keep it in the family. But it also means to be able to take a person who is empty and fill them. A person who has lost their way and help them find that again. A person who is bitter toward God because of the circumstances of their lives and bring about a reconciliation with God and with the neighbor. Which is exactly what Jesus does. Exactly what Jesus says he will do and what he does. The parallels between Jesus' foremother, Ruth, and the teachings and the actions of Jesus are remarkable, it seems to me. Because you see, they're going to lead into what begins next Sunday with a big parade. And of course, everybody loves a parade. But before it gets to the culmination the following week, there will be a very, very sad and tragic story to be told and to be heard. So we're at the point of beginning that story. But to hear it, you're going to have to come back next Sunday. You thought I was finished with that, didn't you? No, you're going to have to come back next Sunday. And it would be helpful, if you can, come back Monday, Thursday, and Good Friday. Those are essential parts of the story. And then on Easter Sunday, the ultimate culmination of the story, where we recognize God's love for all. But to hear that, you need to come back. It's simply a continuation of the story you've already been hearing. Thanks be to God.